welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Wednesday, September 4th, 2024. South Sudan lawmakers complain about land grabbing by foreign governments.
When foreign forces are allowed to violate our territory and harm our people at will without consequences, it raises serious questions about the state's capacity and willingness to fulfill its most critical obligations.
And the spokesperson of the South Sudan Army says there are no foreign troops in South Sudan.
As we speak, we have no foreign troops stationed in Raja. There was only a report that RSF was spotted in three areas, and that was the statement.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Eastern Equatorial State lawmakers allege that Ugandan troops have encroached across the border for years and are calling on the national government to intervene. Lawmakers say people in Magui, Ikoto, and Kapoira East counties bordering Uganda and Kenya have reported being harassed by members of the Uganda People's Defense Force, who they say have erected military posts inside South Sudan territories. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit.
Wachan Bongomin is a member of the Eastern Equatorial State Legislative Assembly representing Pajok in Magui County. He says Uganda People Defense Forces began encroaching across the border in 2012, and South Sudanese living on lands the Ugandans control face challenges.
When foreign forces are allowed to violate our territory and harm our people at will without consequences, it raises serious questions about the state's capacity and willingness to fulfill its most critical obligations. The silence of our leaders, including our representatives in the national legislature, in this case, is not just unacceptable, but dangerous. It sends a message of negligence.
Ohisa Joseph represents Ikotos County in the State Legislative Assembly. He says the Ugandan troops are farming on South Sudanese land and have occupied four villages in his area. He says the South Sudan government should contact officials from Uganda to address land issues.
We South Sudanese, we are respecting that this is a national issue, but now the issue of encroachment and harassment is done on one side. And this one now, it has even given courage to the RDCs. These people will talk with the courage and saying, we have been mandated to protect their territory. So this issue of keeping quiet and some people are given the territory, I believe even General Salva Kiir Mayardit also gave the mandate to our people to protect us of their territory.
Angelo Louis represents Budi County in the State Assembly and urges the national government to protect residents from foreign invaders.
We shall be forced by the situation and the circumstances to protect our lands. In Budi, near Mayasukun, 12 young boys were slaughtered just like goats, and we are keeping quiet, and we say it is an issue of a national government. We are part and parcel of the government. If somebody fails to do his own duty, then the rest shall pick up and do.
Last year, South Sudan accused Kenya of trying to steal disputed territory along their border after communal clashes left at least 8 people dead. South Sudan says Kenyan troops tried to take control of Nakodok in Kapoita East County. In 2009, Kenya and the Sudan People Liberation Movement, the ruling party of what was then Southern Sudan, signed an agreement to establish a temporary border control post at Nadapal to facilitate cross-border movement of people, goods, and services. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from Eastern Equatorial Capital, Torit.
Still on land issues, last year, South Sudan and neighboring Uganda formed a joint committee to resolve the border dispute near Kajokeji County in South Sudan's central equatorial state. This week, the Commission of Kajokeji County wrote a letter listing areas that were reportedly taken over by the Uganda People's Defense Force. South Sudan's military spokesperson, General Lul Roy Kong, says senior officials from the two countries are handling the border dispute.
About 3 to 4 years ago, a joint high-level committee was formed to look into border issues between our country and Uganda, and a report was submitted to higher authorities. But at our level, we have been engaging UPDF from time to time on the need for us to continue living peacefully and coexisting peacefully while the political leadership of the two countries find a long-term political solution.
Lawmakers at the South Sudan National Assembly have complained about the presence of Ugandan troops in South Sudan. The commissioner of Raja County in western Bahr el-Ghazal state told local media in South Sudan that the Sudanese paramilitary rapid support forces were spotted in some parts of Raja County. General Kong says there are no foreign troops stationed in South Sudan.
No, we do not have, as we speak, we have no foreign troops stationed in Raja. There was only a report that the RSF was spotted in three areas, and that was a statement that was being attributed to the commissioner of Raja County. At SSPDF level, the division commander has been asked to compile a report on whether the claims made are true or false. So we are waiting for an official report from the division commander, after which we'll be in a position to comment.
The recent border disputes between South Sudan and Uganda have primarily centered within the regions of West Nile, Kajukeji County, and Moyo and Adjumani districts of Uganda. Cameroon's women-only self-defense gym provides a space for women to learn vital skills and empower themselves against violence. Anzo Kwe visited the gym and has this report from Yaoundé.
In this gym in Yaoundé, women are exercising to learn how to defend themselves. They are enrolled in a martial art that focuses on self-defense tactics in real-life situations called Krav Maga Women Protect, KMWP, set up in May. The martial arts club in Cameroon's capital has around 30 members, and most women who attend this gym have been victims of violence.
I was attacked one day on my way home from work. It traumatized me. Everything was taken, money, phone, jewelry. After that, someone told me about this self-defense club, how to learn to defend yourself or anticipate a possible attack.
Some members say, before the club opened, they didn't know how to protect themselves from potential attacks, while others say they're not comfortable exercising in a mixed environment where men work out. The KMWP club was created by Alain Flavien Yamb. He explains why he launched women-only classes.
Donc pour les femmes, par exemple, qui sont souvent fait violenter.
For women who have been assaulted, it can be traumatic to relive certain aspects of the attack in the gym, especially if they're in a class with men. So we've created this women's option so that they can be amongst themselves, so that they feel safe. But the aim is not just to stay with the women, but to join the mixed classes later on.
Olga Etundi, a self-defense instructor at the gym, demonstrates specific techniques for each type of attack and the criteria on which the choice of techniques is based.
We belong to an association that practices self-defense specifically for women and has developed 17 techniques. We have, for example, a defense against strangulation, whether one-handed or two-handed. Members are taught how to defend themselves against these types of aggression. Slapping is another example.
Ou alors, des gifles.
Experts say setting up an all-women's club is a good initiative, building women's confidence, especially those who've been traumatized by violence. One such self-defense expert is an army instructor, Serge Dejala Epo. He points out that women can also train alongside men to develop the right reflexes for any type of situation.
Je pense que il devrait.
I think it would be beneficial to occasionally include men in their program. Women shouldn't only practice alongside other women. Interacting with men allows them to experience real-world circumstances where they won't have the option to choose between a woman and a man.
Violence against women is the most pervasive human rights violation globally, according to the UN. These Cameroonian women are hoping to change that by learning how to defend themselves against violence, one martial art tactic at a time. Michelle Joseph for An Juan Ku, VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, African leaders go to China. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and our words of wisdom for today comes from the Jing community.
Well, from Uganda refugee settlement, proverb in Dinka language, Domjuar Kutiro, meanings, are the safe when protecting yourself.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The 2024 Forum on China-Africa Cooperation begins today in Beijing. Heads of state and governments of Africa's 54 countries, including President Salva Kiir, are expected to attend. The summit comes at a time when most African countries are looking for bilateral loans, infrastructure development, and technology cooperation, while China is looking for partners and raw materials. Kweku Nwama, professor in the School of International Service at American University in Washington, tells VOA's James Batty that the gathering presents an opportunity for Africa.
I think Africa wants many things. At the top of the list will be some type of debt relief, because Africa owes China a lot of money, and it's becoming clear that many of our countries can no longer carry the debt burden and also do development planning at the same time. So some type of relief from China would be at the top of the list. But also, there were promises that were made the last time Africa met China in this format that have not been delivered. Then there's also things that China wants that Africa may not be fully comfortable with delivering. So you're going to have to negotiate over those things as well. But these types of events, I would say they are net positive, because anytime you have a chance to engage a major power, you should always take that meeting, but you should always show up with a list of your own demands.
So, Professor, as you said, Africa wants debt relief. I was reading an article by Reuters that says that Chinese lending to Africa rose last year, 2023. What is the difference between China lending and that of, say, the World Bank or the International Monetary Fund?
So the World Bank, as a multilateral lender, usually works with these countries to plan long-term development. And also, they've given us money that we've used to pay off other debts. The Chinese have engaged in more of some kind of a bilateral deal. A lot of it is opaque, so we don't even know how much money governments are borrowing. The Chinese notoriously have a tendency to demand some of the things that we know guarantee a good governance and accountability. They tend not to comment about, you know, whether you rig elections, whether you commit human rights violations, all those things. And we do know that in countries where governance is not taken seriously, leaders are likely to also misuse the money.
Most of those African countries are badly in need of infrastructure development. So short of loans, Can they give up something that they have so that they can get Chinese help with infrastructure development?
Well, some of the deals have involved guaranteeing the Chinese access to Africa's natural resources. So if you look at the DRC, for example, they've signed deals that gives China what China wants. China's been looking for raw materials, oil and rare earth minerals, for example. In Africa has some of those. But the type of deals that you sign matter. So are you giving them access to the raw form of the resource, or are you setting up deals that require them to come and process some of that in your country so you can also get jobs for your people? But now China has come to the table with different needs, because the Chinese have invested heavily in new products, particularly electric cars, for example, and they can't export those cars to the West because Western countries are shutting up the economies. So China at this conference is now looking for markets in Africa to sell, their EVs and, solar panels and all those things.
That's Kweku Onyoma, professor in the School of International Service at the American University in Washington. He spoke with VOA's James Batty. Research from organizations monitoring political events in Africa shows the number of anti-government protests has increased year on year since 2017. The study shows African youth in particular are frustrated by apparent lack of reform from very old political leaders. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
A recent study by Afrobarometer, a non-profit that gauges public opinion on the continent, says African youth want democracy and they're unhappy with its delivery. Over the past few months, protests led by young people broke out in several African countries, like this anti-government march in South Africa. In Kenya, Gen Z also hit the streets to demonstrate against tax increases President William Ruto's government wanted to impose. In Uganda, security forces of longtime ruler President Yoweri Museveni suppressed demonstrators. In Nigeria, youth accused President Bola Tinubu's administration of ineffective policies amid an economic crisis. Ivorian civil rights activist Kwame Senu of the Holding Public Opinion Group tells VOA a disillusioned generation of young Africans is becoming increasingly intolerant of the elders of the ruling political classes. The main issue, he says, is that regular elections since the 1990s have not resulted in good governance and adequate service delivery.
Governments are not trusted because they are not seen as competent and ethical. Trust is about competence and ethics. Are our government competent today? Are they delivering on what they promised themselves? That's really a question. When you see the level of unemployment, the issue of the economy, the cost of a living crisis, constantly corruption makes the headline in the media without any adequate response to that.
In Johannesburg recently, youth activist Thabo Menzani led a march on police headquarters. He says the South African government's not doing enough to prevent violence against women and girls.
We are demanding that there needs to be a specialized unit that will be deployed in local clinics and in local hospitals so that there can be an immediate response to cases of gender-based violence. The National Gender-Based Summit convened by the president made an announcement of a similar kind, that the gender-based violence was a national crisis. It made commitments that have not been lived up to.
Senu says connectivity to social media and the internet mean African youth of today cannot be fooled. They are hyper aware of their rights, and they know when their governments are failing.
Democracy is about people government, so the government is accountable to the people. But that's not what I've been practiced. Government seems to think that they are free of any oversight. The political elite on the continent seems to operate in a tone-deaf manner to the rest of the population. So what is requested now by the protesters is a complete overhaul, a complete integration of the will of the people into how government plan the future of our nations.
Sanu says young Africans are frustrated because the elderly political classes seem disconnected from reality.
And let me give you an example. When governments are communicating, they are very much focused on GDP growth. But if you ask the average Ivorian, South African, Kenyan, Ugandan, what matters for them, they want to know that their kids can go to school, up to university. They want to know that they can put food on the table every day. They want to know they can be treated when they are sick.
Sanu says the youth want to be at the forefront of political, social and technological change in Africa, but are mostly being denied power to improve societies. The United Nations estimates that 70% of Africa's population is under the age of 30, while most national leaders are over the age of 60, and many have been in office more than a decade. That's resulting in something Sanu calls generational tension, which in turn sparks protests. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Peace continues to elude Gaza as the conflict there speeds towards the one-year mark, with public rage over the recent killing of hostages, fears over spread of polio, and amid all this, ongoing delicate negotiations helmed by Washington. Anita Powell reports from the White House.
Peace continues to elude Gaza as the conflict there speeds toward the one-year mark, with public rage over the recent killing of hostages, fears over the spread of polio, and amid all this, ongoing delicate negotiations helmed by Washington. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House. First, a small sliver of hope from Gaza after weeks of misery. 2 days of a UN-led polio vaccination campaign has reached one quarter of the exclave's vulnerable children. But humanitarian officials say this humanitarian pause is not enough. Dr. Rick Piepercorn is the World Health Organization's representative for the occupied Palestinian territory.
I think to make a real movement, a real progress on all of that, you need, of course, a ceasefire, and you need to have a start in proper peace process and moving forward.
And that's where we find ourselves as this conflict comes close to the one-year mark, with no sign of peace and with the flames of anger raging. Anger on all sides, from Israeli protesters who say their government failed to rescue 6 hostages before Hamas killed them and is failing to do enough to help the remaining captives. Rage from Palestinians furious over the continued pace of violence that has torn Gaza apart. And what looks like exasperation coming from U.S. President Joe Biden, who spent weeks out of the public eye overseeing negotiations to end the conflict. The White House says it hopes to close on a deal soon, but Biden hinted at an obstacle recently.
And do you think it's time for Prime Minister Netanyahu to do more on this issue? Do you think he's doing enough?
No.
At the White House on Tuesday, administration officials say they are still working with the various parties in Egypt and Qatar to reach a deal that spokesman John Kirby said has 3 elements, though he declined to give specifics of the American plan.
We're working on a proposal that will secure the release of the remaining hostages and will include massive and immediate relief for the people of Gaza and also result in a stoppage of the fighting.
Analysts say intransigence burns on several sides. Hamas fears a deal that will sideline its status in the Palestinian territories, and Israel seeks to maintain control over parts of Gaza. But there is another player in this drama who stands to lose if a deal craters. Washington. Miret Mabrouk is an analyst at the Middle East Institute.
If we cannot negotiate, if we cannot bring pressure to bear on our friends, on our allies, for their own good, let alone for the good of, you know, the region and, you know, for everyone's good, then I'm not sure why anyone would perceive that our involvement down the line would be particularly valuable.
And what of the people born into the middle of all of this? Peace is something they have never known. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
With just over 2 months to go before Election Day in the United States, presidential nominees Donald Trump and Kamala Harris are preparing for their first debate and campaigning on the economy. VOA correspondent Scott Stans looks at the state of the race.
Donald Trump is campaigning hard on the economy and on Kamala Harris.
Here's what we know about Comrade Kamala Harris. She just doesn't care about the American people, especially hardworking people or middle-class Americans. She just doesn't give a damn about you.
The Harris campaign says it's Trump who'll hurt working families with tax cuts for corporations.
Building up the middle class will be a defining goal of my presidency.
She'll make groceries more affordable by cracking down on price gouging. And she'll cut housing costs by taking on corporate speculators.
The economy is voters' top issue in this election. That's a problem Harris needs to fix quickly, says political consultant Hank Scheinkopf.
She's got to explain why people are paying what they think is more at the gas pump and why their bread costs as much as it does and why the manufacturers of those products are giving them less for their dollar.
Trump running mate J.D. Vance says voting for Harris means losing more U.S. jobs.
Think of all the powerful interests, the broken bureaucracy in this country, the people who've gotten rich shipping your jobs to China. They want Kamala Harris. The only way to beat him and the only way to fight back is at the ballot box this November.
Harris's running mate Tim Walz says it's Democrats who are committed to U.S. workers.
Donald Trump and J.D. Vance, they have something a little different in mind. The only thing these guys know about working people is how to take advantage of them, how to not pay them. Every single chance they've gotten, they've waged a war on workers and the ability to collectively bargain.
With just over 2 months to go, this is a close race. Most public opinion polls show Harris with a slight lead over Trump nationally. Michigan voter David Martinez backs Trump.
He's a true American patriot. I think that he thinks more about people that live in this country than he does himself. Everything that he does is to try to help somebody.
Georgia voter Becca Rush backs Harris.
You know, it's 2024, and we need some fresh blood, and we need a new brighter future.
While continuing to campaign, Trump and Harris will spend much of the next week preparing for their first presidential debate next Tuesday. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
And that's all we had on our menu for you this Wednesday, September 4th, 2024. We now leave you with the song Tutu Party by Emerson. That song by Emerson brings us to the end of the party. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Bill Bass, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Come jump, shake your body. Come show me, say you savvy. If you really ready, oh no. Before you even start the party, check for G-string or bikini. Now dance, man, and ready, oh no. Jamal, so we can't party. 40 wedding, we can't get on ready.